Today we're going to explore the role of surgery and other modalities in chronic pancreatitis. So we're inspired for this panel by the fact that modern pancreatitis looks very different than it looked a decade ago even. It's not the typical middle-aged, non-white, alcoholic male that walks into your office now. It's really a sort of a wide variety, a spectrum of people that come in. And a lot of this Jessica will talk about in a few minutes, but we're discovering new horizons for etiology and certainly new treatment modalities that are exciting. And so hopefully we'll explore some of that today. We have really an all-star panel for you. We have Jessica Chaffee, who's here from University of Florida in Gainesville. She's going to get us started by talking about chronic pancreatitis and what's coming. Then Greg Cote from MUSC in Charleston will speak to us about the endoscopic management of chronic pancreatitis. And then Marshall Baker from Chicago will talk to us about the current surgical algorithms for chronic pancreatitis. And then finally, Dr. Lancaster from Charleston will talk to us about total pancreatectomy with islet autotransplantation. And then to round it all off, we'll have all our speakers come up and we have some great cases for the panel. So without further ado, I'll ask Jessica to come up and get us started with what's coming in chronic pancreatitis.
Good afternoon, I'm Jessica Chaffee, and I want to thank Dr. Morgan as well as the college for the opportunity to present today. I have nothing to disclose. As Dr. Morgan just referenced, when I discuss chronic pancreatitis with my medical students and even my residents, they often describe this middle-aged male alcoholic patient who comes into your office with severe chronic abdominal pain and often has opioid addiction associated with it. And unfortunately, this definition of chronic pancreatitis has been around for quite some time. In 1995, it was published in the New England Journal of Medicine that chronic pancreatitis remains an enigmatic process of uncertain pathogenesis with unpredictable clinical course and unclear treatment. And over the last 20 years, this has not made significant progress to where we still describe it as progressive pancreatic inflammation with irreversible damage of the pancreas resulting in loss of exocrine and endocrine function. And in fact, a more definitive diagnosis, which is often cited by my residents, was created by the INSPIRE Consortium, which required radiographic evidence of chronic pancreatitis, such as ductal irregularities, calcifications, or atrophy, along with one of the following: abdominal pain consistent with pancreatic origin, or evidence of exocrine pancreatic insufficiency, or evidence of endocrine pancreatic insufficiency. I would argue, however, that this actually does not really define chronic pancreatitis, but defines what we call end-stage chronic pancreatitis. And these patients are those that are often described with chronic abdominal pain and irreversible fibrosis of the pancreas. Talking about the pain associated with chronic pancreatitis would be an hour-long conversation in and of itself, so I just would like to briefly summarize it in stating that peripancreatic neuropathy will lead to neural remodeling in this area, and that with enough input from your pancreas, with enough chronic pain from this area, you'll develop autonomous central pain pathways. And even with these surgical or endoscopic approaches that we'll discuss later, these renegade pain pathways will persist even after removal of the pancreas. So Dr. Whitcomb created this pathway looking at chronic pancreatitis and broke these up into five groups. And the patients that we primarily focused on, even 5-10 years ago, are those in groups D and E, those with established chronic pancreatitis or end-stage chronic pancreatitis, who already have organ dysfunction. And he created a new definition published in 2016 looking at more of a mechanistic approach for chronic pancreatitis and described it as a pathologic fibroinflammatory syndrome of the pancreas in individuals with genetic, environmental, or other risk factors who develop persistent pathologic responses to parenchymal injury or stress. And the features that we more commonly associate with chronic pancreatitis may also be there in the characteristics section, but are not necessarily mandated. And what Dr. Whitcomb's goal is for us to focus more on those patients who are in this groups on the left of the screen, those who are at risk for the development of chronic pancreatitis, who have acute pancreatitis or recurrent acute pancreatitis, or those with early chronic pancreatitis, as those may be able to be resolved and not lead to this chronic persistent inflammation. Pathophysiology of chronic pancreatitis has been described for some time and was first noted as a three-hit hypothesis or a sentinel acute pancreatitis event. beginning with an environmental stressor leading to inappropriate trypsinogen activation causing pancreatic injury, such as an acute pancreatitis, and then finally leading to an altered immune response causing fibrosis and pain, or those seen in chronic pancreatitis. And that pathway may have many different environmental stressors seen down here on the bottom right, such as alcohol or bile exposure or toxins or even hereditary mutations, which cause a pathogenic stimulus within the pancreas and lead to activation of inflammatory pathways. And this may involve trypsinogen activation, which may cause pancreatic injury, as well as these inflammatory pathways, which cause local inflammation and injury that we see in the systemic inflammatory response associated with acute pancreatitis. However, what we have now seen is that this trypsinogen activation is not necessary for chronic pancreatitis, and in fact, this persistent chronic activation of the inflammatory pathways, which may be leading to chronic pancreatitis. And this inflammation occurs through a variety of mechanisms, but begins with the neutrophils, which are one of the first cell populations to infiltrate into the pancreas. They're responsible for protease activation. They actually aggregate into the pancreatic duct and may cause a partial duct obstruction. They're followed by macrophages, which migrate into the pancreas following the neutrophils, are responsible for cytokine release and may activate trypsinogen and will also increase pro-inflammatory cytokines. And then they're also followed by the adaptive immune system T cells, which are responsible for the regulation of the immune response and may lead to inducing fibrosis, which we'll get into. Pancreatic stellate cells are activated with pancreatic injury as well, and those are activated with a variety of pro-inflammatory cytokines such as TNF-alpha, IL-6, IL-1-beta, and IL-22, to name just a few. And it is these pancreatic stellate cells, which are quiescent in health, that are sitting in the pancreas, are responsible for innate immune function and extracellular matrix turnover. However, in the face of pancreatic disease, these then become activated, they proliferate, increase the production of extracellular matrix proteins, and cause cytokine production. And then when they become activated, they have effects on themselves as well as on the other cells around the pancreas. So they produce more cytokines, including IL-1, IL-8, and IL-15, which lead to increased production of pancreatic stellate cells. And they also create IL-4 and IL-13, which lead to macrophage production, specifically M2 macrophages, which are known to be responsible for pancreatic fibrosis. And it's a combination of these activated pancreatic stellate cells as well as the M2 macrophages, which are new targets for modulating the fibrosis and chronic pancreatitis. Pancreatic stellate cells may be activated by a variety of external factors, including alcohol, cytokines, or oxidant stress. However, several studies have also evaluated protective effects of either antioxidants, PDGF inhibitors, angiotensin blockers, interferon, or curcumin, which may either not allow pancreatic stellate cells to go into their activated state, or may actually reverse the activation and put them back into their quiescent state. And this is just a table form of showing the various antioxidants that have been shown to prevent or reverse pancreatic stellate cell activation, including vitamin E, protease inhibitors, ACE inhibitors, retinol, or even vitamin D. And pancreatic stellate cells, our goal is for these cells, when activated, to then return to their quiescent form, or so that way this is just an acute disease process, and we can restore the pancreas to normal tissue and prevent the pancreatic fibrosis, which is so commonly seen. And in doing so, then, it allows us to focus on these patients in the left side of the screen and those with early chronic pancreatitis, and this is a target for modulation to prevent them from establishing chronic pancreatitis or even end-stage chronic pancreatitis. Several at-risk factors are known for patients with chronic pancreatitis, and this group is quite large. It includes toxic metabolic factors, idiopathic, genetic, autoimmune, recurrent and severe acute pancreatitis, and obstructive. And all of them, either together or individually, can lead to chronic pancreatitis. However, today we're going to focus on toxic metabolic and genetic factors. Toxic metabolic factors may include alcohol, tobacco, hypercalcemia, hyperlipidemia, chronic renal failure, medications, or toxins. Alcohol has long been known to be a cause of chronic pancreatitis. However, more recent studies have evaluated the effect of alcohol on the development of chronic pancreatitis and found it not to be quite as prevalent as originally thought. if we look at all comers here, of all males and females, alcohol, which is here in purple, is actually only responsible for about half of those patients who develop chronic pancreatitis. However, when we look at males under the age of 54, alcohol is quite significantly responsible for the development of their chronic pancreatitis. And this is in stark contrast to females over the age of 75 who develop chronic pancreatitis, where alcohol plays zero to no role. The dose of alcohol is important as well. And in fact, studies have shown that patients who have greater than 48 alcohol drinks per week have a 3.3-fold higher risk of developing chronic pancreatitis as compared to those who have zero alcoholic beverages per week. So while alcohol was historically implicated in the vast majority of chronic pancreatitis cases, more modern studies have shown this to be less true. But the dose and duration is important, but alcohol consumption alone is not sufficient to develop chronic pancreatitis. And this is in contrast to smoking. Smoking is indeed an independent risk factor for chronic pancreatitis and is done so in a dose-dependent fashion. And tobacco is actually a very strong risk factor for the progression of acute pancreatitis to chronic pancreatitis. And this occurs through activation of T cells. Smoking actually activates these T cells, which leads to IL-22 production, which will then activate the pancreatic stellate cells, which we discussed prior, which will then lead to pancreatic fibrosis. And a recent meta-analysis demonstrated that smoking actually increases the risk of chronic pancreatitis by threefold. And when we combine cigarettes or smoking and alcohol together, we can see that there is a synergistic effect. Patients who do not drink, but who do smoke, either less than 12 pack years, 12 to 35, or greater than 35, and develop chronic pancreatitis, there is minimal role here. However, when we compare it to patients who are very heavy drinkers and who also have a significant smoking history, that is responsible for a large portion of these patients. So together, they cause quite an impact. We're going to revert now to the genetic description of chronic pancreatitis, and most of you are familiar with PRSS1 or hereditary pancreatitis. And this is a trypsinogen gene which leads to inappropriate activation of trypsin. It is autosomal dominant and has 80% penetrance. And what that means is that approximately 50% of these patients will go on to develop chronic pancreatitis, and they have a significantly increased risk for pancreatic cancer. The other genes which have been identified to cause chronic pancreatitis are actually autosomal recessive, including PRSS1, SPINK1, and CFTR, as well as a variety of others here. And they work through pancreatic protease mutations, trypsin inhibitor mutations, or other variations. The patients who we should be concerned for testing for chronic pancreatitis are those who have a family history of idiopathic chronic pancreatitis, those with recurrent acute pancreatitis, patients in the pediatric population, or those with first-degree relatives with hereditary pancreatitis. All of these patients should undergo some form of genetic testing to evaluate for genetic causes of chronic pancreatitis, which may be another way to prohibit them from going on to this. There was a recent study about 5 years ago which demonstrated that patients with chronic pancreatitis had a significantly increased risk of developing pancreatic adenocarcinoma. 4% of these patients, much higher than the general population, went on to develop pancreatic adenocarcinoma, which we all know is a rather incurable disease. So if we revisit our three-hit hypothesis, we have our environmental stressors such as alcohol or tobacco, leading to inappropriate trypsinogen activation, which may occur with these external factors or with other genetic mutations here, causing an altered immune response or going on to form chronic pancreatitis, which is created primarily by the pancreatic stellate cells, which are then activated. And our goal in viewing all of this is to eliminate these patients who have developed established chronic pancreatitis or end-stage chronic pancreatitis, and instead to only focus on these patients with reversible causes over here on the left side of the screen. So that way, description given 10 years from now of patients with chronic pancreatitis will be not the 40-year-old patient sitting in your office with opioid addiction and whose life will be forever altered. Thank you.